Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor University. My guest on Better Than I Found It today is longtime Kansas coach Jamie Bermel. Jamie, now in his 12th year at KU, has seen steady success through the years and may well have his best team since his arrival in Lawrence. He and I talk about his recent success, but also about significant players he's coached at other schools, namely two-time major champion Zach Johnson at Drake and four-time winner on the PGA Tour Martin Laird at Colorado State. Jamie's a terrific coach, one of the toughest and grittiest coaches I know, and I'm sure you'll enjoy this interview. All right, Better Than I Found It listeners, let's welcome Kansas golf coach Jamie Bermel to the podcast today. Jamie, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know it's busy for all of us right now, but thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely, Mike. Glad to be on, and hopefully we can talk about some good stuff today.
Well, you know, I have coaches on here a lot. I have some tour players on here too, but I have coaches on here because, one, I want to learn. I want to learn why people are successful. I want to learn and let my listeners figure out other things. I've got a lot of young coaches who listen to this podcast, so there's some wisdom in there you've been hiding from us, and you got to give it out today.
Well, maybe I'll share a couple of things that have worked for me. I don't know if they work for everybody, but there's a couple of things that I do that probably some people don't. So maybe hopefully some younger coaches can learn a thing or two. I know I did when I started coaching a long time ago, that I watched and listened and picked up on some things. So hopefully I can impart some wisdom on some other kids.
Well, perfect. Well, before we get into all of that, let's talk about your great finish at Palm Springs out at the Greg Norman course in the Prestige Invitational. You guys finished second behind Texas Tech, who played some amazing golf. I mean, both you and Texas Tech did, but you guys had a great finish, and you had an individual win the golf tournament, Cecil Belisle. So tell me all about that week.
You know, we played so poorly in the fall with basically the same team that the year before we qualified quite easily for regionals. So didn't make it to the final, but had a freshman, Will King, make it to the national championship as an individual. So I felt actually pretty good with all the experience we had coming back, the entire team. And we just didn't play well in the fall. At times, individuals did. Cecil won. Will King won. But overall, as a team, our backs were against the wall. And I think the guys knew that after we finished. I thought our winter work was really good. I thought guys came in beginning of the semester really hungry, wanting to improve, felt like they kind of had a chip on their shoulder going out to Palm Desert. Again, not a very good finish last year for us. I think we literally finished 18th or 19th in that field. And a bit of nerves. Cecil didn't play. Will King actually didn't play. They were over in the individual tournament that last year. So a couple new faces on the golf course, but boy, we had a great week, and the guys were focused and determined, and obviously Cecil played lights out, really helped the team effort.
You know, I was actually with our individuals last year at Terra Lago, and my other assistant coach was over at the Norman course, but I got to walk in Cecil's group for a whole round, 18 holes, and I thought, this kid's pretty good. I'm kind of surprised he's not on their team right now. And this year he's won twice now. And I saw him a few times last week, and he has really come a long way. What a nice player he's become.
Yeah, you know, he just works so hard every single day. He's very disciplined. You know, I've never seen a kid in college work the way he does. And I've been around some pretty good players, and they've worked pretty hard, but I don't even know who the second hardest worker I've ever coached is. He's that much farther in front of anybody. I mean, we get home late Thursday night from Palm Desert. He's already our off day was Friday. He'd already contacted the strength coach to go in and get an individual workout in. He was out at the facility yesterday. practicing, and that's from the winter. And but that's every day. You know, I think Cecil got off to a slow start last spring because you know, he went home to Minnesota and didn't get the reps in he needed. This year he came back early, played in December down in Florida, so he was ready to go. And you know, I think you know, he's an overachiever. He'll outwork anybody, and I look for big things for him this spring.
Yeah, I've enjoyed getting to know him the last couple of years as we've seen you guys at tournaments, and I know you're really proud of what he did. Good going last week. That was wonderful work. You know, let's get into just a little bit of your background, because it's like a lot of people don't they don't know backgrounds of coaches. They just know the coach as they have been at the university. But I know you and your brother John, who also is a coach, got into the game early. How did you initially get into the game, and what steered each one of you toward coaching?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I grew up in a really small town in Iowa, Keota. It's right now it's probably 800 people, little 9-hole course. I have three other brothers, John, older one, and then a younger one. And our dad used to take us out to the course and we'd just play. I mean, not many people were playing golf at the time. I'm 59 years old, so early 70s basically, and he just kind of dragged us around. I was third youngest, so I wasn't near as good as the older two, and just exposed us to the game. You know, small town Iowa, we played all the sports, football, basketball, baseball, golf. So John played, he was much better player than me. He played Division III golf. I followed him to Central College, played there. When he graduated, he wanted to be a club professional, and he got into the business. And Mike, you know this as well as anyone, probably, as your dad was a club pro, that the hours those folks worked. I mean, he was 6 days a week, 6 o'clock in the morning till dark. And when I graduated college, I wasn't a very good student, unfortunately. I thought there's no way in the world that I'm going to be a club pro. I really didn't enjoy the game that as much as he did. He enjoys teaching, all that stuff. So I was actually in campus recreation, and I was at Drake as the intramural director, and I knew Jack Wallace, the old golf coach, and he said, "Jamie, I'm going to retire this year. You know, you ought to talk to Lynn King. I think he wants to hire a part-time coach." And I thought, boy, this is going to be the greatest job ever. I intramural director and go play golf every afternoon. Because that's what my coach did in Division III golf. And found out pretty quickly there wasn't a lot of golf playing involved in the golf coaching job. But then I got married, and we started having kids, and you know, I got to do one or the other. I couldn't do both. So then I went to Iowa State as the head golf coach, and being the most northern school in the Big 12 probably isn't the easiest position I've ever been in. So football wasn't winning. We had no golf course, no facilities. So Mark Crabtree at the time went from Colorado State to Louisville, and we played in their tournament. I'm like, boy, this Fort Collins looks like a great town. And next year, I was the golf coach at Colorado State. Was out there 13 years and made my way back into the Big 12. Kansas, I always had my eye on this job. I thought it was a really cool town, and you know, the Rock Chalk Jayhawk, they're on TV all the time with basketball. So 12 years ago we made our way back here, so been quite a journey.
That is quite a journey. Yeah, you know, I knew you'd been on all those places. I just didn't know how you got to all those places. So before I get into some of your players you played that you've coached, I do know that your brother, being a club professional, qualified for the PGA Championship at Southern Hills in 1994. I was at that tournament with my high school golf team, literally the whole week, basically. But I know there's a good story about you caddying for your brother. It was Arnold Palmer's last PGA Championship. Tell me about that week.
Yeah, so we were on the range. I think this was Wednesday, and we were on the range. Obviously, he's a club pro, kind of feeling out of place. I'm the caddy, don't really know what I'm doing, just trying to stay out of the way. And this Steve Smith, a guy, he's a PGA pro from Indianapolis, I believe. He's on the range warming up, and all of a sudden, here come you could hear Arnold coming. Not that he was talking, but all the people chasing him, and he comes right on the range and he walks right behind me, and he says, "Hey, Steve." And Steve Smith had written Arnold a letter saying, "Hey, I'd like to play a practice round if it works out." And they agreed that it was going to be on Wednesday. And Arnold says, "Steve, who we have here? It's going to be slow today. Let's get four." And Steve says, "Well, I don't have anybody." I'm like, "John, get in that group." He's like, "No, I don't want to play." I'm like, "What?" So I'm thinking, how am I going to figure this out? So they take off for the putting green. I said, "John, let's go to the putting green." So I walked by Steve and I said, "Hey, you guys playing today?" He goes, "Yeah, we need a fourth." I said, "We're in." So we go up to the first tee. And of course, Mr. Palmer is he's signing autographs on Wednesday. It's taking him forever. He finally gets up there and he goes, "Where's Steve?" He's standing right next to me, Mr. Palmer was. He said, "Where's Steve?" And I pointed. He's like, "Steve, who do we have here?" "We got you and this John Bermel." "Oh, you found a fourth?" He said, "Okay." He goes to the marshal, "Hey, could you radio down to the range and tell Raymond Floyd we already have four guys up here?" So,
John Turbo pushed Raymond Floyd out of the group.
yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, he did. So, unbelievable presence out there as Mr. Palmer was. They were gambling. He had lunch with them and he did make them settle their bets. Because I think Mr. Palmer took a little money off the boys. And, but what a great guy and unbelievable experience for those club pros.
I just remember that week, well, that summer he played in the last US Open he played in too at Oakmont. And it was like a standing ovation at Southern Hills at the PGA at every hole, basically, when he finished. I think his final round score, I think he shot 74 that day at Southern Hills, the second round, missed the cut. But that's pretty cool for you to have been there for his last PGA Championship. A tournament he never won, by the way. He's runner up four times, wanted it so desperately.
Yeah, it was quite an experience. I think John, I think we played early, late, and John birdied two of the first five holes. So we're like in second place or third place. I turned around on, what is that, par five? Six, is that six, the
Five.
par five?
Five.
Five. So we were two under through four. And I turned around and he has about a 6 footer for birdie. I'm like, oh my goodness, we could be in the lead. And, you know, his club pros very seldom make the cut. He ended up, I think he shot two or one over and three over or something or four over. So, but quite an experience and sure had a whole lot of fun.
Oh, I bet you did. Well, thanks for telling me that story. I'd always heard about it, but I had not heard it told. Went to the straight to the horse's mouth. Okay. You're now in your 12th year at Kansas. So I've watched all of that time, basically. I've been coaching all during that time, your 12 years at Kansas. And I always look at your teams and I think of teams that are tough, that are gritty, that are resilient, that are competitive. I mean, I think of you, I think those players are taking on your personality. So I'm going to ask the question, do you feel like the players do take on that personality of Jamie Bermel, or is it a combination of that and you recruit kids with those characteristics and qualities? I mean, what are you looking for in a recruit? So kind of help me out with that. I think your teams are very gritty.
Yeah, I think it's both. You know, we talk about it on a daily basis. You know, they laugh and giggle when I say at the first meeting of the school year, we have one rule here. We're going to start with being on time. And, you know, they laugh. Who's this old guy trying to tell me I won't be on time? And, you know, as the freshmen do, they're you know, that first week is a struggle to be on time. So, yeah, I think it's both. We look for that. You know, when I recruit, there's about three things, and hopefully I don't offend people when I say this, but one thing that I look for is a multi-sport athlete because we're kind of in the Midwest. You know, we get kids that don't focus on golf till later in school. I prefer multiple siblings in the family. It's very difficult in our system to recruit and coach an only child. And I haven't since 2004. It doesn't work in the system. I've tried and tried and tried. I prefer that both parents work because I found that if both parents work, they're very organized because mom's not, they have to organize rides to practice. If, those young kids before they start driving, organizing tournaments, all that stuff. So I just feel like those three characteristics, and obviously their golf skills is pretty good. That's obviously something we all take a look at, but those are some characteristics that I look at, and if they have those, we're at a good starting point.
I think so too. I've really never had a coach that had the guts to say those things, because it does potentially offend someone. But the truth is, if you're gonna be able to be a gritty coach, expect resilience and toughness and all of those things. You kind of want to make sure they're not too soft coming in. And if you're looking for the right characteristics you just spoke of, you probably won't get kids that are soft. And I guess it's not an accident that. And it's not my imagination. You really do have tougher, grittier teams. You said you're from the Midwest. You've always coached basically in the Midwest your entire career. So I guess you've probably always looked for kids like that.
I've done quite well recruiting kids out of Minnesota. If they went to Fort Collins, Colorado, they thought they were at the beach. They go down to Lawrence, Kansas, and they feel like they're in Corpus Christi, Texas. So, any weather is better than Minneapolis, Minnesota in April. I can guarantee you that. I've been to the state championship in Minnesota the first week in June and had every piece of clothing that I brought with me on and still was frozen. So yeah, that's the type of kids we get. And obviously, as well as anybody, Mike, in Oklahoma, you still get cold weather, and when you were coaching there, it's brutally cold, windy, and we get the same, probably more cold than Oklahoma, obviously. And it's an outdoor sport. You got to practice, you got to play, you got to compete.
Very well said. And a lot of coaches through the years have, when we've been at Prairie Dunes for the conference championship. Now, some years we've been there and it's been perfect weather. But generally, when you go to Prairie Dunes in sort of the last week of April, there's a potential for some wind, some cold, some rain. There's potential for all of that. And I'm okay with it. Sometimes it feels really, really difficult being out there, but, if you've coached up your kids right, they're ready for that challenge. It does. I just don't want to coach a kid who believes that everything's got to be perfect, including his technique, including the weather, including the greens. If all those things need to be perfect for him to play well, I've got the wrong kid. But you hear it all the
Absolutely.
time. Yeah, for sure.
And we don't get those kids. We don't start at the top of the AJGA All-American list and work our way down. That's not something we've made our bread and butter on. It's just we develop kids, we mature kids, we toughen kids, and hopefully, we don't recruit any All-Americans, but hopefully we graduate All-Americans.
Yeah, it's about developing, isn't it? It really is. So
It is.
you kind of given a synopsis of what it looks like, what a Kansas golfer looks like, or maybe at Colorado State or at Drake as well. So I'm going to talk about three of the players you've coached, and I want you to talk about them actually. Some of your former players that probably exhibited those qualities that we've just been talking about. One of them was Zach Johnson at Drake. Before I ask you to tell me all about everything that happened, first of all, he needs to write an autobiography because I truly think it's the one of the most underrated, impressive, inspiring stories in the history of golf, period. To have done what
Correct.
he did with what he had to work with and where he started, that's crazy. And I hope he does. I think he will one day write a book. I hope somebody encourages him to. He's won 12 times in the PGA Tour. Two majors, a Masters, and an Open Championship. He's been the Ryder Cup captain and played on several Ryder Cups and President's Cups teams. It's obvious this guy has been a rock star as a professional golfer, but didn't start that way. So I want you to tell me about his recruitment to Drake. I want you to tell me how you got this player there, how he developed, what qualities he had that made him a world-class golfer. None of it on the surface would have happened. And I use this example all the time with young kids. You don't have to start there. It's just the development. Go ahead.
Right, right. So, true story. I was coaching at Drake. And my first year, I ran into Dale Anderson, who was the coach at Iowa State. We were talking about recruiting. I knew nothing about recruiting. And Dale said, "Jamie, who are you recruiting?" I said, "Oh, I really like Travis Korver and Donnie Teeter." Well, he went and signed both of them. I'm like, "Well, that's rule number one. You never talk about your recruits." You know, I thought he was just small talk and being nice. So the next year, same Big Four tournament, said, "Jamie, who you like?" I said, I like Brian Rupp." Well, Brian Rupp was the number one man at Xavier High School in Cedar Rapids, and Zach Johnson was the number two man. And so I went to a high school tournament, and they were paired in foursomes. The one and two played with the one and two from the other school. It was just a dual meet. So I show up, and Brian Rupp is on the tee. He literally takes a minute, 5 seconds to hit. And I immediately, you know, this isn't going to work. This, you know, all the, you can't have slow players, blah, blah, blah. So this little guy gets up there and he just rips it right down the middle. I'm like, "Who's this kid?" "Oh, it's Zach Johnson, the number two man." So I talked to the high school coach. And I said, "So you want to play college golf?" And this was literally my second year at Drake. "Yeah, yeah. Where's he looking?" "Well, he really wants to go to Iowa, but they don't want him. His dad went to St. Ambrose, NAI school. They've been talking to him, and that's about it." So long story short, you know, I became very disinterested in Brian Rupp, who actually went to Iowa and played. Had a nice career there. And we got Zach Johnson. And he was, you know, I'd have to look at the record books in Iowa, but I think he shot 80, 81 at Willow Creek Golf Course in Des Moines his senior year at the state high school golf tournament.
Mm.
So he comes in and misses the first four tournaments, didn't qualify, qualifies for the Illinois State event, which I believe, Mike, was the first Golfstat live scoring ever.
Okay.
Because that's where Mark Lash was living at the time in Bloomington and wanted to try out his new system. And Zach finished fifth in the tournament, I think, as our fifth man, and played the rest of his career at Drake. Graduated is basically the number. I didn't coach him his senior year. I went to Iowa State, but went back to Drake, my wife and I did. For their graduation, there was four seniors that year. I said, "Zach, what are you doing this summer when you graduate?" He said, "I'm turning pro."
Okay.
Number three man at Drake's turning pro. Okay. Good luck.
Have a good life.
Yep. Yeah. But, you know, John Means, former coach at Minnesota, Army, Idaho, he told me very young in my career, he said, "Jamie, if I give you one piece of advice, if a kid tells you he's turning pro, just agree with him, because you don't want to be that guy that, you know, he's upset with you when he's 27, thinking he can beat all these people. He's sitting in the cubicle, upset with the world." He said, "Just encourage, they'll know." And they do. They know if they're good enough after a couple of years. And lo and behold, $47 million, he made the right decision.
He made the right decision for sure. And he's an example I use all the time. Guys, it doesn't matter where you start. Your job is to take the talent God gave you, whatever talent that is. I don't have the same amount of talent as somebody else as a coach. I don't. But if I'm developing it, I'll have more than I had before. And that's correct. All players are trying to do is develop their talent. If kids understood what Zach Johnson did or understood his process as how he did it, then at least they'd end up, if they end up not playing the tour, they'd end up better than they were before. But they all want to play today as a freshman, the first tournament. And if they're upset that they're not playing, then I say do something about it. Develop your skills so you've got a chance. But what's his best quality that made him a major champion that you think got him there? Because it didn't look on surface like he was going to be that type of player.
I think it's his self-belief. He honestly thought the next shot he hit was the best shot he'd ever hit. He was never afraid of the moment. I remember at Wichita State at the Shocker, his junior year, we had a good team. We finished 23rd in the country that year and won the Missouri Valley for the first time in, I think, 90 years. And he is toe hooking three woods. I mean, just looked awful. And he went out there and shot 71-70. And I'm like, and they didn't have live scoring at the time. He handed me his scorecard. I'm like, wow, great round. I said, what happened? Just, I don't know, coach. He hit the first one down the fairway and everything just kind of came together. I'm like, good for you.
Yeah, well, I just know this. He has been amazing as a professional golfer. He's still very competitive. He still plays well. I thought that fans and a lot of people treated him unfairly after this past Ryder Cup. I think he did a great job. The team just got run over. It happens. You ever had a bad finish as a coach?
Yeah, many times.
Okay. But I think he did everything he could as a Ryder Cup captain. The players loved him. They respected him. So I just think it's sad that he's gotten so much grief for the finish of the team there.
When you go over there and play on their soil, that's a tough win. You better have some very, very good players, and things have to go your way that way because that doesn't happen very often in this day and age. Anyway,
No,
maybe 40 years ago you could do it, but not so much now.
no, absolutely. But anyway, he's a wonderful player. You got to coach, and like I said, I hope that Zach one day writes an autobiography. I would love to get it from his perspective as to how he did that. Kids need to see that and hear it. So another great player you had at Colorado State was Martin Laird, who's won on the tour. A wonderful player. It seems like about three or four times a year he's right in the hunt someplace. Doesn't always win, but he's competitive enough to do that. Tell me about Martin at Colorado State.
You know, I was that was my first year at Colorado State. Brandon Askew, Fargo, North Dakota, Corey Prue at Spokane, Washington, and Chez Revie at in Phoenix. Missed on all three of those guys in the early signing period, Colorado State. And was talking to Larry Romjew, the Nebraska coach at Stanford, and I said, because I'd never recruited international players before. I said, how do you recruit international players? And this, of course, was before cell phones and all that stuff. He said, well, I have this lady in England. I have her phone number on my desk. Call me on Monday. So when we got back from Stanford, I called him and I called this gal from England. I said, hey, do you have any players available? I'm looking for one. And she goes, yeah, we have this kid named Martin Laird. I think he's pretty good. He's 2-3 on the Scottish boys team. David Ingles is in front of him and somebody else. And so I called Martin. His dad had spent some time in the States. He had a sister that was in grad school at Columbia, working on a physics, master's in physics. So he was somewhat familiar, but he was dead focused on coming to America to play golf. And it was us, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and I think USC maybe were the four schools. And lo and behold, he sent me a VHS tape over. Never seen him play in person because we were recruiting late. Signed him in the late signing period there. Came over as a 17-year-old freshman. And I think he missed the first four tournaments in the fall. Played okay late. Went to Hawaii, played pretty average. I brought him in my office. I said, Mark, I'm paying you a lot of money to play golf here, Colorado State, and you're not holding up your end of the deal. We need better. And he finished in the top 10 the rest of the year, every tournament. So, but he was one of those guys, really smart. He was an academic, two-time academic All-American, two-time All-American, but he had one thing to do when he got to America, and that was make the PGA Tour. And He did it. Been out there 15 years. I had dinner with him last 2 weeks ago in Phoenix before the Phoenix Open, and just a wonderful person. And he's won four times and made 20 some million dollars out there. So what a great career he's had.
Yeah, and you know, he was your first international player. You hadn't
He
appeared.
was. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, I was recruiting a lot of international players when I was at Oklahoma State. Went to Alabama for a year, and I've been at Baylor, and I literally have my first international player after 10 years on the team. So I haven't done a very good job of that. Probably need to do better. Been recruiting a lot of good Texas kids though, so that's been good. But I'm kind of lost right there, so I'd have to maybe have you help me on that one. Who knows? So the final guy I want to talk about as a former player is one that I actually came in contact with probably as early as you did. He played for you at Kansas. His name is Chase Hanna. He came to the golf camp at Oklahoma State. I remember thinking, that's a pretty nice little golfer. But then I got let go and went to Alabama and just lost track of him. He's a 2016 high school grad, as I think I recall. But when I saw him on your team and I watched him play for 4 years, I kept on thinking to myself, this kid's good. He is tough. He is gritty. He gets a lot out of what God gave him. This kid's really good, and he played great for you, and he's playing the DP World Tour now. So tell me about Chase. How'd you get him? How did that all come about? And is he as competitive as I think he is?
So when I took the job here, I took over for Kit Grove. He got let go. I coached against Kit as a when he was a player with Ross, and then when he was the coach here. So I was familiar with Kit. I called Kit. I said, "Do you have any commitments?" And he said, "Well, we offered Chase Hanna 75% Kansas City." I'm thinking, "Who's worth 75%? Who is this kid?" So I went over and watched him. And I think, Mike, you kind of said it, the golf swing, I mean, the competitiveness, it was quite obvious, but he was a little loose, but I watched him play 18 holes and I'm like, it was just like going to prom. I'm like, wow, this is the beauty queen here, because he was just so competitive and just a the ultimate grinder. And I loved it. His parents, neither of them played golf. His grandpa taught him how to play golf. So Chase was the oldest, had two sisters. So yeah, I honored that commitment, and thankfully I was smart enough to do that, because he was a great player for us, and kind of helped us get the corner turned on the culture and the program.
Yeah, I think he's probably, when you look back on it, would be a turning point in Kansas golf history, because he ended up being a really good recruit and probably your first big recruit you signed. So every coach needs that early on in their career. So, and that wasn't early on in your career, but at Kansas it was.
Yeah, I think so. More so, Chase changed the culture, because you talk about his competitiveness. Every day at practice, he was competing and battling, and he hated to lose. And he worked at his game. And the Big 12 tournament down in Prairie Dunes, when he won as an individual, beat Scheffler on the last hole. I mean, in brutal wind, and how Prairie Dunes plays. But yeah, that was quite a he had quite a run here.
He's one of those kids that, the way I look at him, is one of those kids that hates losing way more than he loves winning, because he
Yes.
just hates losing. So, yeah, good kid. I hope he makes it in professional golf. Hope he plays for a long, long time. He's another great story. So you've got to coach a lot of great players. There's some great competitive guys that are playing professional golf. Are there any really inspiring stories where a player overcame adversity or did something that you think about it and it inspires you? And if not, that's okay. But I always like to hear if there's anything like that.
Well, I think first and foremost is Cecil Belisle. He's on the team right now. Here's a kid that went to Mankato State. The coach that recruited him quit. Mankato State's a Division II program. Cecil kind of got lost, basically flunked out of school, got a fresh start at South Mountain, straight A's there. Has gotten a 3.6 GPA here, I was taking his final class to graduate this spring. It was won twice for us. I mean, that could have gone in many directions up at Mankato State. And, he changed. He accepted, that he needed to pay attention to his schoolwork. And it just a wonderful human being. But obviously, you think about how kids sometimes don't react to the difficult situation they're in until it's too late. And thankfully, he did and corrected the problem, and nobody. I wouldn't think there's a lot of people anyway that really get excited about playing junior college golf. And he went down there and, won two national titles for South Mountain and made his way back to Division One, which is a really cool story in my opinion.
I like it. He actually wrote me here at Baylor when he was leaving South Mountain, and I didn't have any availability. I didn't recruit him, obviously. But when he ended up at your place, I thought, I wonder how Jamie will do with him. And you've done just fine. He's done really well for himself. Wish him the best of luck as well. And very inspiring, by the way. But what's the best piece of advice another coach has ever given you? You kind of alluded to a piece of advice earlier, but is there anything you use all the time, you've used all through the years that really are thankful that a coach told you that?
I always go back to the John Means story about turning pro. That really stuck with me. I've watched Mike Small for 20 some years work his craft, and you watch him coach, and he's kind of a no excuse guy. I remember it. We were at Sycamore Hills or Sycamore Ridge in Indiana. It was kind of a pre, it was a fall tournament because they were hosting regionals in the spring. And they had just aerified the greens literally a week before. And I remember Mike on the putting green and his guys, like all the kids were, they weren't real excited about playing on a checkerboard. And Mike says, "Well, you can either adjust or you can go home. You have the choice." And that just always, stuck with me, that the way he dealt with that situation. And it's just so true that, golf's about battling adversity. And, you're the only guy with keeping the score. So it's your score that counts.
Mike is brilliant, by the way. The way he coaches from a player's perspective because he's one of the best players that's ever coached college golf. And I interviewed him earlier in the year because I wanted to hear from him. It's obvious he knows what he's doing. And in very few words there, he told his entire team, "This is your choice. Do it or else." We ended up at a golf tournament one time, and I'm walking out from the parking lot onto the putting green, and the putting green is dirt. And I look across number 18 green, and it's pretty much dirt as well. And so I immediately told Ryan Blagg, "Get the guys over here now." So he said, "Okay, why? I want to meet with them." They brought all the guys over to the putting green, and I said, "Guys, here's the deal. These greens are not good this week, but there's a first place trophy that I just saw in the golf shop. They're going to hand it out 2 days from now. You have to decide whether we want that trophy or if you want to go back to Waco griping about those horrible greens that we saw at this tournament. It's your choice. Make it now." So I'm glad to hear that maybe I was a little bit on the same level as Mike Small right there.
You certainly were.
I don't get it. I don't get if they're playing when in the world did the condition of the golf course become more important than the competition itself? When did this happen, Jamie? Do you realize it didn't used to be part of the game?
No. I mean, things have changed. I
They
don't
really
know
have.
if for the good or the bad, but things have changed.
Well, anyway, I'm a firm believer in the condition of the course has nothing to do with whether or not you win or play well or any of that. So we've been talking about coaches, and you've mentioned two or three that made an impact on you. But who are your all-time favorite coaches, two or three coaches in any sport? Doesn't have to be golf, but and why? What
Yeah.
makes coaches, what makes them that way for you?
I think two of the coaches that I always admired, looked up to, obviously, Mike Holder, the dominance he had very early in my career, the way he worked. I remember coaching and recruiting, and 32 years ago, I'd get up and work out at 5 o'clock in the morning, and there Mike would roll in about 5:30, and he'd kind of look at me, you beat me in the gym. And he was always the first one on the golf course recruiting. I think he just, quite honestly, I think he outworked people. That was his passion, his job, his love, and he did an incredible job. I always kid him when I see him. Mike, I don't know if you can coach these kids in 2022 or 23 or whatever. And he always got a chuckle out of that. But, I had great respect for him as a coach. And I think that we battled at times. Obviously, he won more than me. I thought Greer Jones did an incredible job at Wichita State.
Love Greer.
One wonderful human being and a great, just a great, he was the old grinder. As the hoodie, the golf hoodie is now kind of the fashion statement. We always kidded Greer 30 years ago. Greer always had a hoodie on. And he always says, wow, I'm cold. What else you want me to wear? But Greer was just a peach of a guy. Probably one of the funniest guys I've ever been around was Steve Nosler at Oregon. And we were playing Positiempo. It's a funny story. And he's coaching his guys in the par three. And his kid hits a terrible shot. And as they take off down the fairway, Steve Nosler looks at me and goes, Jamie, if that ain't the worst damn shot ever in college golf, it's got a deadlock on second place. And I'm just like, well, Nos, you may be right. Richard Sykes was he was a great guy too. So, there's a lot of in, kind of in my era, your era, Mike, there was a lot of guys I looked up to. Devin Brous at Purdue, John Means at Minnesota, Jim Karras at Michigan, Brownie at Ohio State. But there's a lot of young guys. I say young, they've been coaching quite a while. I have great respect for Mike Small. I think he's done a tremendous job at Illinois, building that program and that legacy there. Obviously, your path, Mike, that you took at coming from the high school, working your way up to Oklahoma State, now Baylor. It's been fun to watch. I think Ron Hibble does a great job at OU and Greg Sant at Texas Tech, John Fields at Texas. I mean, there's a lot of great coaches, and they're hard to beat. They're really hard to beat, especially in this league. You better bring your A game, and you better be ready to play.
That Whispering Pines, we're going to play there later in the spring, you and I. And if you don't have your A game, you're going to finish pretty far down. If you do, you can get competitive. We have just a great conference, really happy. And we're losing Texas and Oklahoma, but we're gaining Arizona and Arizona State and Utah and Colorado. So we're gaining some good teams as well. So I think we'll be fine on that. But thanks for that on those coaches. Two of those coaches, Mike Holder, I worked for, and Greer Jones, I've respected since I was a little boy. I remember when I was just took up the game, he was the rookie of the year on the PGA Tour. And when I went to work for Mike Holder years later, he didn't talk in reverence about very many coaches. He did not, but he did about Greer Jones. He just absolutely, I mean, it was like Greer made an impact on Mike when he was a freshman, and it never ever left Mike. And he still talks about Greer that way today. Greer Jones, one of the most underrated coaches in the history of college golf. I'm glad you mentioned him.
Yeah, it's so cool to see Greer get inducted in the Golf Coaches Hall of Fame this year. I think it was well past his due, but I was so happy for Greer and the kids he's coached, the teams he had. Well, he was hard to beat when he had it going.
He had the same qualities that I think you have and that Mike Small had, as far as still good people, still fun to be around, but their kids take on the personality of the grit and the determination and the fire and the motivation to be great. He recruited some kids like that. I was at Oklahoma State. Greer didn't get the top flight player. He got kind of the next group down, and he just found the toughest kids in that group and took them to a golf tournament. So love that. Changing landscape of college golf and collegiate athletics in general, with NIL, transfer portal, conference realignment, paying for grades. We could go on and on, and it doesn't resemble what it used to resemble. So I sometimes struggle personally with adapting and adjusting and overcoming all of these different things that have happened. I wonder if coaches like you do, and what are you doing to adapt? Because I struggle sometimes.
I really do. I struggle with a lot of things you mentioned. The value of an education, I think, is lost. You know, if a kid comes to Kansas and doesn't play one tournament and graduates with a degree, that's more than what they had when they got here. I do, and I'm trying to adjust. I'm not a big social media guy. You know, I've raised, we have 27, 25, and 23. The oldest and the youngest are. So I get where that day and age with social media. But it's hard. It really is. I really struggle with NIL and golf. Some of these kids that we recruit, or a lot of these kids we recruit, or come from very fortunate situations, and it's hard for me to get real excited about, you know, me trying to help them out with some NIL money, or you know, do get involved in that. I struggle, and it's not going back to where it was. I know that. So we all have to adjust. I don't know what the adjustment is, but I do know the value of an education. And that's at the top of my list for all my guys. I want them to graduate. And all the years, I think only two have not. And that's very important to me. My parents didn't have four-year degrees. And they made that quite clear, that to make it in this world, your chances are better with one. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. And quite honestly, you know, with the new ruling with Tennessee yesterday, do we have rules anymore? And what are they?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you saying that. I'm glad to hear that it's not just me that's struggling with this. And you and I are, you're much younger than I am, 5 years younger than I am. But so we're both kind of nearing sort of the finish line, if you will, as coaches. So maybe we won't have to deal with what a 30-year-old coach is going to have to deal with later. But you mentioned value of an education. Because of all these other things, the value of education has taken on, in people's minds out there, certainly in the social media world, it's not nearly as important as getting a $2.1 million to, you know, sign with Texas as football or whatever it is.
Right.
It's losing. Like, to me, a value of education is still important. And the education you get beyond the books at that university, you get an education, a cultural education. You learn to start dealing with adults, that type of thing. And one of those adults is your coach. But nowadays, they can hop in the portal without even telling the coach. It's like, this is the craziest thing ever. But life lessons, way undervalued. So if you're teaching a kid life lessons that are going to make him a better human being and a better citizen and a better father and a better whatever, that's way more important than the NIL money they would have gotten at another school. But that's hard to get people to realize that. So I haven't been overly vocal about this on this podcast, just because I want this podcast to be sort of uplifting and great stories and things. But I think it's going to be hard to sustain what we've created, and it's probably not what you and I got in for.
No, I don't think the model is sustainable. My concern is the trickle-down effect. I mean, this is just these 32 years of coaching have just been incredible. I mean, the people you meet, the places we go, the golf courses these kids play, you know, are we going to be a club sport in 5 years because all the money is going to football and basketball? I don't know. I really don't know. And that's what scares me, because the way college athletics is now, it won't be in 5 years from now. So it's concerning, but hopefully it all works its way out.
Well, in the modern day, a kid like Zach Johnson, who Iowa didn't even want. He went to Drake to play for you. If he did develop his game nowadays, it's his probably going to be somebody's going to talk him, an NIL agent's going to talk him into getting the portal so he can go to another school, and his stock has gone up. So let's go get some money to go play over there. That's not why Zach Johnson got into college golf. He got in there to try to develop his game. I think stories like that are going to be less and less. And one other thing I've said to a bunch of people is the job that Herb Page did at Kent State was rock star, unbelievable. Every 5 years, he had a team that was in the top 15 or 20 as a mid-major up north, right? I mean, nowadays, I think people would try to go in there and steal his Canadian freshman All-American and steal him. And I'm just thinking, I don't want that to happen. Herb Page was a great story. He built great teams by developing players. I want that to continue, but I'm not sure it will.
I'm with you, Mike. I think Herbie's the last guy standing in that mid-major realm. There's no way that's sustainable. I mean, it happened to us a couple of years ago. We had a good player that transferred farther south, and for what reason, I don't know. But and we're in the Big 12 and the Power Five. We're not in a mid-major northern school, so it's going to be very difficult to ever have somebody duplicate what Herbie did.
Well, I say the guys in your generation and mine, we just continue to try to make a difference, improve lives, give kids opportunity, challenge them, make them better. We do that. We've done our job. And yeah, I still want to win. You still want to win. You're competitive. You want to win, but we're going to do it the right way. So anyway, okay. When you coach against other coaches and walk fairways in recruiting, you sort of get to know them. Like, I've gotten to know you pretty well through the years, but we don't see each other all the time. We see each other at four tournaments a year and maybe three or four recruiting tournaments. So we've become really good acquaintances. I've always considered you a great example of what a coach should be. But, and I think you're extremely disciplined, and I just love that. But I decided to find out a little bit more. So I called and talked to one of your former assistant coaches, Chris Wilson. Chris, I hope he's doing great in the real world out there because he's no longer in college golf. That's a hole in college golf. He was a wonderful coach. You know that. And I said, Chris, tell me something about Jamie that I don't know. Tell me something, or just tell me anything you can. So I'm going to read what he wrote. You've got to listen to this. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. He said a lot of things about the team and the recruiting and that type of thing, but he said it was an absolute honor to work with Jamie Vermel. I learned every day from him on how to run and build a team, how to hold standards, how to win at a place that it really isn't that easy to win at in golf, how to raise a family. My kids are now 9 and 5, so he's been side by side with me trying to navigate not only coaching and building a team, but also marriage and fatherhood and just life in general. When you play for him, he invests in absolutely in every player. He will give you 100% of everything he has. That's Chris Wilson. So tell me what your reactions are to that.
Well, as well as I do, this profession is, it's not a job, it's a lifestyle. You love those boys like they're your own. You want the best for them, but you're still the coach, and sometimes you're the dad, sometimes you're the mom, sometimes you're the good guy, sometimes you're the bad guy. But I always felt like I got to coach these kids to be the players and the men that they ought to be and they want to be, because sometimes they don't know that path. And I'm a pusher. I'm an overachiever myself. I'm a Division III player. How many Division III coaches players do we have coaching? Probably not very many. I mean, we have tour professionals, assistant coaches now with Dudley Hart, Mike Small off the tour, all these Division I coaches. So I always, those statements are fairly true. I pushed hard. I try to work as hard as I can every day for those kids because, you know, these 4 years, they fly by so quickly. I don't want to be the coach, or I don't want to be that player that says, I wish I would have done this or that. You know, we always try to push them every day to be the very best.
Well, Chris told me that that experience changed his life as well. So you did that for an assistant coach. I truly hope to have that impact on assistant coaches. I still talk to my former assistant coaches all the time. And Alan Bratton at Oklahoma State is one of my former assistants, and I have a great amount of respect for him. So great job with that. You had a big impact on Chris, and hopefully Tony Blake goes out of there with the same feeling in a few years or whenever he is through. So, you know, Janie, you've been a breath of fresh air today. I really appreciate this. I love the stories, and I just love to getting to know a colleague a little bit better. You're a great coach, and I just look forward to seeing you at Whispering Pines. Maybe we can play off for the conference championship in April.
Well, as we all know, Mike, if we're playing with Baylor, we're probably playing pretty well. So that would be an honor, and boy, it would be a dogfight, I'm sure. But let's go do it.
All right. Well, have a great spring. Tell Cecil congratulations for me on his win, and keep up the good work, and we'll see you in April.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully everybody enjoyed the podcast. Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much.